like others. I don't know of too many people, but I know of some who have long COVID. And one is a man in my local community involved in GA coaching, playing golf the whole time. And he came to one of my clinics there about a fortnight ago in advance of today's Oireachtas Health Committee meeting. And we had to pre-plan how he would get into the office, and it was a rigmarole. He was bringing oxygen with him, and it was a pitiful sight for someone that 2 years ago would have been in peak health. So it's very real, and I think many nurses and allied health professionals have reached out to us before today's meeting as well. And the symptoms, we need to get our head around and understand. But I think what's most frustrating and devastating, maybe is the better word to use, is that they don't all feel fully believed by their employers. And some of you are here today from the HSE, and I just think that we've been speaking about clinics and follow-up care, but in the first instance, their colleagues in the HR column of the HSE organisation not taking this very seriously, I think, still. When COVID hit this country like a bang, hit the world like a bang, we were all told to stay home, but people who worked in the health services were told to get out and fall into the front line. So I don't think they had any choice, and now they've no excuse. They are where they are because they gave incredible service to our health system during those bleak and dark days. I now believe, and I maybe have answered this already, I think there's 130 health staff at the moment still on leave as a result of COVID. Would that be the case?
Just to say, as first deputy, thank you, and just say we believe in this entity, we believe it exists, and that's, you know, we're really keen to provide the service. Just to say that, and just my colleague Grant might be able to comment a little bit more on the position of healthcare workers.
Thank you. In relation to healthcare workers, they have access to the occupational health services for additional support. As you mentioned there, advice about recommendations to help people in the workplace returning to work. So they do have access to occupational health for that advice and for that support. They also, within the HSE, have access to an employee assistance programme that provides a counselling service and support service for them as well. Within the occupational health services, in the HSE, we also devised a pathway to allow early access into support services for long COVID as well. So that is still in place and remains in place. You alluded to a figure there. The figure we have is 100, and it's approximately 120 whole-time equivalents that were availing of the special scheme of pay for long COVID.
Okay, and I've no doubt the occupational health people in HSE believe this to be genuine, and I've no doubt you're offering a supporting role in that regard. But day to day, your staff are interfacing with a whole different realm of people. It could be managers. There's a whole vertical structure management. There's local HR, and they would repeatedly tell me that even amongst more senior colleagues in the hospital system, it's not always understood, which is a pity. And it's where it is understood, it isn't believed in all instances as well. So that is frustrating. And sometimes they feel as if they're put out there as someone who's just unwilling to work, being awkward, being tricky, being lazy. These are words that have been used to me. In a whole different realm, in a Garda Síochána, if someone's injured in the line of work in a Garda Síochána, the organisation finds a role for them. They're brought back as quickly as they're able to go back to work, but they may not be back on the front line, on the beat, so to say. I would just like you to outline what measures have you taken, particularly with nursing roles, which are very demanding and require you to be on your feet all day. Have you looked at any new roles for people that they can fulfil their nursing duties, but in a more less intensive way, that they can be back in the work environment? Or have you looked at any blending work options for people?
That has been looked at, absolutely. Now, I know Grant may be able to talk a little bit more about this, but certainly in my own, the clinical service that I've worked in, I know that certainly has been the case, and that blended working has been looked at and considered for people. People are put on less onerous duties to facilitate a return to work, and that would be very much part of their approach to facilitating a return to work for anybody. And that could be recommended by, you know, one of our consulting colleagues. Or Grant, do you want to comment a little bit more on facilitating a return to work?
Absolutely. It's part of return to work to help support someone and facilitate return to work. We will provide recommendations looking at phased returns, reduced hours, potentially as well if we have someone who has a physically demanding role. We can look at and give recommendations about adjusting those duties, looking at different roles to help facilitate that person back into the workplace. So we do give that support and those recommendations to the organisation.
Okay, can I next ask, and apologies if this has already been covered in today's meeting, but where's all this going to end up? Will it eventually be recognised as a disability, a lifelong disability? Because the people who contact our offices via phone call, email and calling to clinics would say that, so there was the immediate phase where they weren't able to work. Now they're at home, trying to live a normal life, but finding themselves breathless, tired, and all of your symptoms you've outlined here today. But there will come a point where, you know, we all in our workplace pay a stamp, a PRSI stamp, and these people don't know if they'll ever get back to work. And I just want to know what level of dialogue has taken place with the Department of Social Protection in terms of long-term COVID, in terms of how these people will be recognised. Would it be a lifelong disability, or surely some dialogue has taken place? And apologies if you've already answered this.
We haven't. And I think the point to make here is because there's still so much emerging information, and because it is only 4 years since the pandemic started, you know, it's difficult to say somebody has a lifelong condition in that relatively short space of time. So I think that requires ongoing research and ongoing monitoring internationally from a disability perspective. What do you think, Grant?
Absolutely. And I think that involves a lot of different stakeholder input as well from different departments, because occupational health, we obviously have a role in occupational health here as well, but it's wider than occupational health as well, and needs that kind of other government department input into it as well. So it's more of a national kind of policy consideration.
Okay, and I don't want to comment too much. It was obviously that agreement reached between the department and unions, and there's a 3-month rollover, which is backdated to the 1st of April, and that's good. But rollover after rollover will eventually run out, and I do think that level of dialogue needs to happen. Some people here have had long COVID for 3.5 up to 4 years, as you've said yourself, Mr. Jeffrey. I think it's important that we start using other terms like invalidity and disability. If we're down to a cohort that's 120 people in the health services alone, I think we're going to have to grasp that nettle very soon and say, well, you know what, they may not be coming back to work. And I think that those kind of terms need to start being used, because they're very quickly running out of rollover time. PRSI stamp contributions run out as well. So I just think that there needs to be a level of dialogue now with the Department of Social Protection beyond this 3-month rollover period to where we get these people to long term. Thank you.